I think I like Trump. He seems cool.
What?
But a lot of Americans, they don't listen. They talk a lot, but they don't listen. Do you think you would give your own kids freedom and gaslight them?
Oh, I don't want kids. There's so much responsibility.
And I was like, oh, like, do you want to have kids? And she was like, no way. Have you looked at the outside world? I'm like,
I sound like your friend. Okay.
if you're already struggling to like protect yourself, is a partner in the vision?
I think I don't want to be a burden.
Let's say hypothetically we get married.
Yeah.
How did it feel to not have that unconditional love and have that be missing? And do you think it'll be hard for you to sort of task in finding answers into your already packed schedule?
No, you probably manage.
Yeah, what's your favorite part of hosting podcasts?
Are you gonna do more cosplay stuff? I know there's like a lot of cosplays. Is that donk? Nice.
Do you watch anime?
I do.
What's your favorite three?
I really like Attack on Titan was really good.
Okay.
What's that anime where you go into a game and then they're stuck in that game?
Sword Art Online.
I really love season one.
I broke off my headphones. Did you see that? I was like,
Hello.
hello, you
How are
found
you?
me. I'm good.
I know your name is just Toxic Bunny. Is that sort of like, I don't know your real name, unfortunately.
Do you need my real name or is it okay to be anonymous?
It's okay to be anonymous.
For the podcast, I normally stay anonymous.
That's totally fine.
Thank
Do I
you.
just call you like Bunny, Toxic Bunny? What sort of usually your preference?
Whatever you prefer. It's nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you. Where are you from?
I am currently in Canada, but I'm from the US.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think how I came about you, I think I was like going through like Instagram. I was like scrolling through Instagram. I was on the Explore feed. I was looking to bring on some creators and I saw your page into like photography, storytelling. You've grown your sort of socials. You do a bit of streaming. So I was like, oh, I'd reach out, see if she's interested because I want to sort of bring in some younger sort of content creators. So thank you for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
So I guess, could you give the audience and me maybe a bit of context on sort of who you are and sort of what you're currently focused on and the things you do? I know all the things I mentioned are a small gist of it, but I guess maybe you can give us a more in-depth breakdown.
Yeah, of course. I know that content creators get a bad rep. No, I do not have an OF, but basically, I guess I started in corporate Amazon. I was in finance for around 2 years. I worked in tech for a little bit, and then I just like during COVID got laid off. Throughout the whole process, I already started like a little bit of a journey of documenting every day and then creating content on the side. And I think like it's definitely been really good for my mental health as well as like my current like self-awareness and discovery, just learning to make content and just like working for yourself. So I definitely think that there's a lot of freedom to freelancing. That's why it's called freelancing. But it's like a different set of stresses, and it's not necessarily for everyone. I have friends who work in corporate still, and it's like their income bracket is like uncomparable to a new content creator. But I think it's a really fun journey, and it helps you discover and understand yourself a lot.
Interesting. What was your journey like in the corporate world? Like, how many years did you work in Amazon? Was it just 2 years? How long after you graduated were you working in that space? Tech
Yeah,
space.
so I graduated during COVID. So I never actually worked in the office. And I think the reason I got laid off is because I changed to another company that I only worked there for like 3 months, but like layoffs started happening. And then, COVID and layoffs, and then it's been hard to like find another role. But I think I also wasn't really looking because at that point, like content creation already had like a little bit of a stable grounding. Like I was earning enough to survive. So I was like, oh, maybe I should just make the full-time transition. Of course, like try to look for 6 months for, unemployment, but at the end of the day, I think it was a good decision to stay content creation. And then I mostly focus on making Instagram content like storytelling and cinematic content. So some brand deals there. I stream as well. Currently focused on travel and wellness content. And then finally, I also do like photography, like wedding photography and videography. So you're doing everything at once.
I have a close friend right now. He's sort of in the corporate marketing space. And he's been wanting to sort of do his own thing. He's been freelancing on the side for the last 2 years, one or two clients, helping them with marketing. But it's been very hard for him to make the leap and fully transition over to freelancing or running his own agency. And I have actually like another friend that's sort of in the same situation where she works at Google. She used to work at Google. Now she works at Salesforce. And
it's because the income is too high. You don't want to give up on the income, I think.
Yeah, it's like golden handcuffs. That's what they call it.
How did you sort of build a steady base while working enough to a point where you can just transition over?
So, okay, I'm gonna clarify. I don't earn as much as I used to, like, but costs are lower. So I guess what I'm trying to explain is, like, when you're working in a corporate setting, I was in finance in particular, at least for me, it was not rewarding because it felt like I was working for a big giant and not really contributing to the better society. Like, I was in charge of, like, AWS, like, headcount, budgeting, which basically means I was meeting with a lot of, like, L7s about next year's budget. That, like, puts a huge, like, strain on, like, a newly graduate kid's mind because it feels like you're the reason people are getting fired, right? So it kind of drained me a lot because, like, maybe I'm just too weak. I couldn't do that without, like, feeling like a really bad person. So at the end of the day, like, I feel like after leaving that setting, I went to another company for, like, business analyst, and then COVID hit, right? Or, like, it was during COVID, but, like, the layoff started to hit. So I guess I was kind of forced into a transition, but throughout all of COVID, I was streaming and making content. I started with streaming, and then I realized I had to grow and learn photography and video to, I guess, like, grow my stream. So it was fun to have a small community to talk about, like, your everyday, and, like, it's nice, like, logging off and having, like, a group of friends you can talk to. That's how it started. I specialized in wellness content back then, so we basically talked about mental health all night. I have since transitioned a little bit away from that because it's really hard to find brands that want to work with you when you're talking about anxiety and depression. I think it's good that people talk about it, but I don't think our society is ready to hear all of that yet. Especially brands that are like, oh, she's talking about sad things, let's not work with her. So I transitioned to, like, travel and how that can play a role in, like, changing up, I guess, your mental state. Like, at the end of the day, it's like wellness, right? I don't have to say trigger words like anxiety or depression. I could say mental wellness, mental clarity, right? So it's like trying to transition to be workable with friends, I guess. I changed the topic in question, I'm sorry.
No, that's totally fine.
So, like, while you're sort of working at those tech companies, you're streaming, you're starting to create stories and photography. Was all the income from that just from donations from your community? And did you literally go from zero to, I don't know, X amount of followers within that year? And during that time, you're just talking about wellness stuff and you're able to, like, and was it, what type of, yeah, tell me about that. Was it just like a stream and you just talk and you read the chat, or would you share different videos? Like, how would it work?
Yeah, so I used to mostly focus on just chatting. I actually did horror games and like free therapy basically, and like confession streams. So it was like a conversation. The horror games are kind of like exposure therapy. It's like, oh, let me, like, put you in a very scary situation together so that we bond. but that was really fun because I know I just did a lot of activities that other people didn't want to talk about, didn't want to do, because I guess it put me also in a situation where I could practice being scared in a safe environment. And I kind of played really well with, like, the wellness talks, especially since, like, horror is a really good way to, like, relieve a lot of anxiety and, like, expose yourself to dangerous situations in a safe space. So that's how it kind of started, and then it just kept growing because I knew that I needed to grow my other socials to be able to, I guess, like, get more brand deals. I'm gonna be honest, I feel like the whole, like, content creation world is really gatekeepy. I had a really bad experience when I first started, when, like, networking, very gaslighty and kind of manipulative, like, other streamers that I met. So I actually self-isolated for around 2 years as a content creator. I didn't make any friends. I didn't talk to anyone. I didn't talk to any other streamer. I was just like, I'm going to do this by myself. I'm going to grind, right? So I just, like, sat down, posted twice a day, and just, that's it. I didn't talk to anyone. I was like, oh, I'm too scared to make friends because they're all really scary. But, like, this recent year, I kind of plateaued on socials, and then I realized I repivoted, focused more on finding brand deals and earning income that way, and then also learning to trust people again and make friends, because, like, once you open yourself up, you realize it's not all bad people. So I definitely recommend networking. I wish I did it earlier. I freaked out and closed myself off. As an extreme introvert, I was like, oh my god, the world is scary, so I just isolated myself. But don't do that. If you're trying to go into content creation, make friends. You need a strong support system and a group of people you could talk about like content with. It's really helpful. And in terms of like income, yeah, in the beginning it was mostly donations. It was mostly like support from the community, especially since I was talking a lot about like wellness and free therapy. I think a lot of really kind people joined the community and just like followed along the journey. I did get some brand deals in the beginning, but it was like I was really bad at negotiating. So that's what I mean by like you gotta make friends because the industry is so gatekeepy. When you make friends, you can talk about, hey, how are you pitching to brands? Like, what are you asking for deliverables? Like, it's not online. You're gonna have to talk to people and find people you trust.
Love it. It's pretty cool how like you're an introvert, but like you have this like outward high sort of energy sort
It's
of
anxiety.
vibe.
Yeah, I call it social anxiety that presents itself in the form of like hyperactivity.
I think I used to do the same thing when I was younger. I think I used to be really shy. And I think I was like watching this like this it was like a, this YouTube channel back in the day called Simple Pickup, and they used to like pick up chicks, I guess.
And one of the
You don't
tricks of
sound
like,
nervous though. Like you're not speeding up in conversation, you know?
I've gotten really good over the last few years, but I think when I was like in the beginning, I used to like just the thing was like you'd say what comes to mind, so I was just saying whatever, I had no filter, but then it was sort of better than being shy, and then I think. Then I sort of compressed that, like I kept talking a lot, but it was sort of more sort of focused. And then now I've learned how to just like slow myself down.
Any advice for nervous, anxious people?
I think one thing I used to do a lot is I used to breathe. Like if I catch myself talking too much, I'm like, okay, I'm getting into. Okay, how are you going?
Oh, that's smart. Thank you for the advice. I'll definitely
Well,
try that. It's
because
hard to remember.
yeah, and you can't, it's awkward to do it mid conversation. So I guess when I catch myself snowballing, I try to like take a step back and just purposely slow myself down. But like when I croak and there's like something in my throat mid-sentence, and that throws me off, and then now I'm speeding up talking, and then I have to like catch myself and be like, okay, let's just slow down.
I've been told I talk really fast, so yeah, that's really good advice. Just like remembering to talk slowly, but that feels so uncomfortable, you know?
True. Maybe I'm naturally a slow talker, so I think I found what was like naturally my pace. So maybe you're naturally really fast at talking. Maybe that's your balance. I'm trying to think because I'm born in 99, so I'm like the year of a rabbit, and
Oh,
I
you're
feel
like
like the
younger than me.
is it
Yeah,
98.
I'm for 98.
Oh, so you're a tiger.
Yeah. What? Okay, you need to not dress that mature. You need to dress younger.
Is it? But
You're
I'm sure
giving
it's like a
off
deep.
like older vibes.
Oh, I used to wear a lot of like baggy clothes, like hoodies. I used to like be like into like the whole Supreme Palace Vape sort of
Oh, okay, yeah.
setup. But then I don't know, like I sort of like grew out of it, I guess.
I just like pastel colors. It
Is
throws
it?
people off. They're like, how old are you? I'm
Is that
old.
what's is that like beige and like is that gray? I like gray tones.
I don't know if that like.
Yeah, my room is basically content creator powers.
It's,
This
I
is
see
our
green,
superpower. This
purple,
is our superpower.
purple.
We can do this.
Nice.
Yeah, this is my only superpower. But yeah, it's like pastel colors are like this color.
Oh, got it. So like I was completely thinking of like sort of more dull colors, but pastel colors is like kitty colors.
It's like sort of what like
Yeah, like baby
it's
colors, like
like a
slightly
coloring.
whiter.
It's like a watercoloring set. That's
Yeah, 100%. That's like my
so
favorite
funny.
color scheme.
So what's your main thing you do now? Do you do a lot of streaming? Is it like Instagram? What do you split your time between everything? Like what do you do now?
Honestly, I am very like OC about my time. I think I'm really bad at time management. But I would say I stream 3 to 4 times a week. And I kind of transition to like IRL streaming niche, which is like travel, going outside, taking them outside to explore, I think it helps their mental health, especially since my community is more introvert heavy. They don't like touching grass. You know, gamers don't want to go outside, but they want you to go outside so they don't have to go outside. So sharing new experiences, sharing the world with them through my lens, that's like around 2 out of 4 streams per week. And then the rest is focused on wellness, so like free therapy, confession booths, kind of to give them an opportunity to talk about what they're struggling with. I personally really enjoy that. So I was talking to my parents about going back for an MD for psychiatry. They were like, why? And I'm just like, I don't know, it's interesting. But yeah, that's what I mostly do on the streaming side. And then my dog recently passed away, so I haven't been really good at posting, but I used to post daily. So it's like once a day, usually in the evening times, and it's like travel, like wellness related content, like how to deal with like, you know, different types of stressors or like ways to like de-stress on the weekend, and like where I would go to like, I guess for a reset, mental reset, talking about like different topics, like trying to tell a story, talk about mental wellness, but like not make it like a trigger for brands, basically. So once a day, and then I mostly post on TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram.
Do you do a lot of outreach for brands, or is it like inbound, or do you like every day you try to pitch a brand? What's sort of like the main routine?
So I'm one of those like, if I throw 10, like if I throw 10 of these like darts, one of them will hit the center sort of people. But yeah, I haven't been recently because this month I've been kind of just giving myself some time and everything. But usually I would say around 50 brands per week. So I do outreach, but I also like some come in. They might not always be a good fit when they like have offers though. So I tend to also do outreach at the same time. I think it's a good balance because when you're outreaching, you're aiming for brands that you think would be a good fit to you. And then if they reach out to you, it may or may not be a good fit. So it's like certain like games might reach out to me, but then I don't really play mobile games. So it just depends on if I feel like it's a good fit. Because another big thing about content creation is you kind of have to build trust, right? And so if you're working with every single brand that comes in, sure, you can earn a couple $1,000 here and there, but like then you're just kind of a sellout. So at least for me, I try to target brands that I think I can speak for or I think are really cool. Maybe they're a bad company at some point and we find out they're like kind of weird, but then I don't feel guilty about it because I like their product. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's kind of my mindset.
I reckon that's your talking pace.
Yeah, because it's like even if they are like they're in backlash at one point. You can still feel like, hey, but I still like their products or I still like the experience, regardless of what other people think. Yeah, because there's backlash about brands all the time, especially like political things. You know what I mean? Like maybe they support a certain side that everyone doesn't support, but like if the product is good, the product is good. You can't judge a company for its leadership if their products are good to a certain extent. I think that's kind of unreasonable. It's like judging America on our political stance. Trump ruled for like 4 years. That doesn't mean everyone's a Trump supporter. I don't know if that's a good way to put it. It's like you can't judge culture, people, and the government together. So the kind of the same way, I feel like brands should not be judged like that either.
Interesting.
That was completely random, but yeah. Because our brains, I guess like that comes down to like communication, which is like the biggest and hardest thing to do in reality. Like proper communication, right? Because it's like I think humans do innately make assumptions, and it's not really anyone's fault that we do. But it's like our brains are good at recognizing pattern and making connections. So it's like you might, if it's similar to the topic, you might like unintentionally lead back to it because it's like related to it. I wonder if that's just like pattern recognition. Probably is.
So I'm going to take your advice. I'm going to say, hey, we're going into a different topic.
We'll go back to
Into a
content
different
creation.
topic.
The point of your podcast, I got you.
We're going into a different topic. So I'm applying what you just taught me. So this is no pattern recognition. And this different topic is about sort of ego, where like what I just did of saying, hey, that's a good point. I'm going to take that on. I think you're right. I could have improved on that. Let me apply. Let me give you credit. That's something that no one can do. Like, that's something that people really, really, really struggle with. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Kind of tying back to like I think there was one point that relates to content creation that I kind of didn't cover. I actually don't get motivated because like I feel like I deserve anything, if that's helpful, because that kind of ties to like my diagnosis as well. I have OCD. So when I do work, I don't do it because I feel like, I need to get somewhere. I do it because it gives me a sense of relief. So if anyone else here struggles with that, it's almost like an impending doom. You don't get it done, there's an impending doom. So people are like, how are you so productive? Because I'm mentally ill. No, it's like I view it as debuffs, right? Because kind of relating to that, ego, I think, is only an issue if you think you're doing enough. Like, I think I can be confident in certain things, like maybe my work ethic. But I think, yeah, you're right. Ego is something you kind of need to let go of when making content in particular, because there's always going to be someone better than you. You're never going to be big enough, and you're never going to be earning enough. Like, that's something you just have to understand. Like, until you get to a point where it's really sustainable, there's not much in the ego. Like, at the end of the day, I know a lot of content creators like feel like numbers matter, but like, what do numbers matter if you can't earn income from it? Like, what do matters mean? What do followers mean if you can't survive, right? Because there's so many content creators with like an ungodly amount of followers, but they can't earn enough to like hit minimum wage. So at the end of the day, it's about sustainability. It's about grinding. It's about like finding a niche that you like, but also you can find sustainability in to survive. Yeah. So I guess, yeah, ego is a thing when it comes to maybe. I would say most people have ego when it comes to topics they talk about in their education and their knowledge, or that's probably an area that's okay to have ego, but especially in the creation world, your followers mean nothing. There's always going to be someone better than you. There's always going to be someone bigger than you. Not to say that you should be depressed about it, because that's also not good, but it's like using that as motivation to grow, I guess, and then push yourself to higher heights. Yeah. Yeah, but I think I work hard not because like, oh, I deserve a better future. No. I work hard because it's like impending doom. I need to finish all 10 tasks, and if I don't, oh my Lord. Can I sleep? Do I deserve this? Yeah, so it's use your mental debuffs as positives and learn to work with what you have, I guess.
Got it. Different topic, but tied based on what you just shared. What was your upbringing like? Like, was it like having Asian parents, doing sports, volunteering, trying to get a good sort of CV, try to get a scholarship at a decent sort of college and university, do things on the side, try to join some societies and then run some clubs, get some scholarships, use the scholarship and then spin that into some nice tech position. Was that your sort of upbringing? It was like constant like pressure to like get high marks or
That's a good question. So I guess I've moved like 10 plus times growing up, like a lot of moves, both in North America and China. And then my upbringing was kind of like my parents actually didn't control me that much. It was more like gaslighting. It was like, oh, it's your life and your decisions. If you mess up, then you pay the consequences, which taught me responsibility really young. Like, I had allowance, I had budgets, you know what I mean? And that's probably why I majored in like econ and finance. But it's a lot of teaching independence since a young age. And then I do think that moving very frequently did impact me a lot growing up, because every time you change schools, there's of course this bullying because you're like weird and you're different. So a lot of just like finding myself, I don't think I'm at a point where I'm happy with yet, but a lot of self-discovery because you're alone a lot of times. I feel like I'm quite quirky and also quite weird in a way. It's cool now, but like I watched anime, I cosplayed, I don't know, I was kind of geeky, I played video games. These were all weird things, growing up, that the kid that sat in the library to read because no one wanted to play video games with her. But yeah, like it's cool now, but like growing up, it wasn't a good thing. But it gave me time to, I guess, like discover myself, and reflect on the things that happened in my life. So yeah, very free parents. I put most of the pressure on myself, with them occasionally gaslighting me to get me in the right direction. But most of the schools I went to were international schools. Like after middle school, like I went abroad, so I was in a lot of international schools, and the course load required a lot of like service, IB. I took the IB. I don't know if you guys have that in Australia. Probably, right? No, you don't have it. Okay, like it's, I think it's a European model, and then they force you to do like service and sports and arts. So I had a lot of that growing up. And I think my mom was very educated for a time in a sense. She was like, you have to learn how to play first before you can learn how to study. So I took a lot of random courses like horseback riding, fencing, I know how to bartend, taxidermy, all the instruments, sports. That's so random. Singing, like it's weird. It's a really weird set of like skills.
When I think of like fencing, horse riding, sort of like traveling from like North America, Canada, China, I think of like some like old family, like Succession sort of TV show, but like an Asian version of that vibe, fencing and horse riding.
Fencing was at school, horseback riding's because I liked it because my sister was doing it and I wanted to be like cool. I was just a really curious kid. Like dance, like I would just get myself in situations where I would learn something new. Because I was curious. Like I was the kid who asked why like a million times to the point where teachers told me to be quiet. I was that kid, you know, why is the sky blue? Why are we doing this today? Why are we learning about triangles? Is it relevant in the real world? You know what I mean? That kid. Parent-teacher conferences. Can you ask less questions? But that kind of played a role, I guess, in like my interest in wellness, my interest in understanding like our behavior. I mostly like specialized in behavioral economics, finance. I loved game theory, so it's like figuring out why people think the way they do. It's just fun, I guess. And then that also probably played a role in the hobbies I chose.
Nice. Do you think you would give your kids, your own kids, freedom and gaslight them?
Oh, I don't want kids. There's so much responsibility. I don't think I can raise healthy children. Do
Okay.
you want kids?
I want a ton.
Actually?
I think a ton is sort of exaggerating, but I do want kids, yeah.
Okay, I'm afraid I'll mess them up, you know?
I remember I was like this, I was really shocked. I was at a friend's birthday. We went out to like a restaurant and there was this girl opposite. It was his friend, his first time meeting. So I just, you know, we're talking and I was like, oh, like, do you want to have kids? And she was like, no way. I'm like, oh, well, I was like shocked. I was like, well, how come? Very similar reaction to what you said. She said, have you looked at the outside world? I'm like,
I can't protect them.
what about the outside world? He's like, the crime rates are so high. Look, climate change, or like people are being killed. Look, all the wars happening. Like, I don't want to bring a kid into this world.
Sound like your friend. Okay.
Okay, so, oh wow. Okay, so you're in that section. Okay.
Yeah. No, I
What?
sound exactly like her. I'm like, how am I supposed to protect them from the outside world? Or at least till they're 18, you know? Because it's your responsibility until they're an adult. I don't know if I can protect children till they're 18, maybe even 16, you know?
Have you been to any countries that have worse conditions than the current America?
Do you want me to be honest?
Yeah.
No.
Have you?
To any like bad parts of China, any third world sort of places of China, or have you just been in the main cities?
I have been in like more rural places of China.
Okay.
But I feel like the people's mindset is better. It's not violent. Like it's safe. Like I know that the world paints China as like a scary place, but I feel like it's safer than he like there than in the US. And like I'm constantly like I'm American. I'm legally American, so I'm kind of stuck in the US. I can kind of only work in the US. I can only like buy houses in the US and I can only stay in the US permanently, but I can travel out, right? Like I've traveled a lot and like I feel like even Europe is safer. It's not about the color of my skin and like immersion. Like maybe it's like the assumption people are like, "Oh, maybe it's 'cause you look Asian, so you feel safer in Asia." No. I feel safer in Europe than I do in the US. Like, sure, I might get pickpocketed, but like, it's just the environment's different, you know? Like, people are more
Is
lax.
the US the least safest place you've been to? And if yes, what's the
Or how I feel.
what's
Like, you
the
know what I mean?
second least safest place based on how you feel?
Probably Greece. Greece was kind of like, I don't know. Greece, maybe.
Got it.
That's
So
not even
Greece
that
is
bad.
still better than America.
Yeah,
Got
it
it.
wasn't that bad.
Because like I've been to like countries, I've been to like Vietnam, Thailand, Mongolia, New Caledonia. Like those are countries that like I'd prefer to live in America at its current state more than those countries.
Which state, though? Which state, though?
Probably like, I don't know, like obviously like based on what I'm seeing, it seems like Texas seems like a nice place to live in.
Okay, but would you live in like the redneck states? You know what I mean? Like, would you go to like rural America?
Have friends that live in like Nevada, like near Las Vegas, but off the strip, like I don't know
That's
where,
not
how.
too bad. That's not too bad. That's not.
Yeah, that's like a nice area. I stayed in San Francisco for 9 months.
In
Recently?
2019.
Oh, okay. That wasn't as bad. It's so bad now. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. But we stayed in like,
Okay.
I was like in this place called Bayview. It was probably roughly 20 minutes away from the city, 10-minute drive away from the San Francisco downtown. And like Bayview, it was like the hood. Like it was the first time living, like if I felt like I was in like an American movie where like all the houses look run down. You see like abandoned cars everywhere.
You see people
You
loitering.
weren't scared?
I was like, yeah, I was scared. I was scared. I was scared.
Okay.
And
Oh
obviously, I
my
got
God.
used to it over time. I was like, wow, this is really, really rough.
I was like, maybe you're like an adrenaline junkie and you're not scared, you know? Maybe you like the rush.
Like, it was definitely, yeah. And then, like, when I was like scootering around the neighborhood, I was
Yeah.
definitely on edge. But despite like me experiencing that and experiencing like all those other countries I mentioned earlier that I feel like are worse so than America, and I'd be even more on edge. Like, I feel like the world isn't that bad.
Well, I'm like really short and I fit in suitcases, so maybe I have to be more careful. That's the joke I make. It's just like, I don't know. There's like a lot of, I think women are more likely to get kidnapped than men, right? Is that generally true?
I don't know if that's like a statistically
I have no
true.
idea. Yeah, I have no idea. But I like in my head, I think I have like a really scary view of the world. It's like, oh, I'm more likely to fit into suitcases and I'm more likely to get kidnapped, so I have to be more hypervigilant in public spaces.
Interesting. So, given that
Yeah.
you don't want to have kids, because like,
You don't want to bring them into
I
this.
can't even protect myself, let alone protect children. No.
Perfect. Off that line. Do you want to find a partner? Like, if you're already struggling to like protect yourself, like, is a partner in the picture or vision, or is that not even in it because you're just trying to survive and trying to get through this tough life by yourself? And adding another person to the picture is just more problems.
Like, I think I don't want to be a burden. Like, I'm like
Got it.
hypervigilant, right? Like, I have a lot of things I'm struggling myself. I feel like other people also have things they're struggling with. So it's, especially since I'm freelancing and I feel like I can't be a proper support to someone else. I guess, like, maybe it's just past trauma and feeling like I'm not enough, but I don't really want to be someone else's problem. And, like, if I was working a nice, cushy corporate job, earning like a nice salary with health insurance and stuff, like I would feel less pressured and probably more comfortable finding a partner. But it's like if I'm not and I'm just freelancing and I'm trying to like fight for a goal, I don't feel like I should put that on someone else as well, you know? And the stresses are going to be different, right? And I feel like it's hard to be with someone who's not like that. Then you could say, why don't you do it in the crater? Because I feel like that might get toxic too, you know? Because it's like you might be competitive. Maybe another creator. But like you said, there is a sense of ego there,
Let's
right? Why would another creator want to be with someone like me?
say there's like a girl. She's like, say 20, 21. She just finished university. She got like a job, but like it's just like a job that like maybe it's like a low like graduate position at some like firm that's like maybe not one of the big fours, but it's like right under. She makes like 70K a year. She's like struggling to pay rent, or she still lives with her parents. And then she meets a man and she marries the man. She quits her job, she cleans the house, she cooks for him, she relies on him for money to buy clothes and food. She looks after their newborn baby and she relies completely on the man. So she's a major burden in your sort of terms, I guess. Is that bad?
So my mom was a stay-home mom. And I don't think she was a burden per se because like I think housework is still a portion of, you know, like if you get divorced, she gets like a certain amount of your income. You know what I mean? Like if someone gives up all her dreams to take care of you, that's also a job. It's just an unpaid job. But I will say that because I don't want children, so it's not as relevant to me because I could be a caregiver to someone. But like I don't want to have children, which is probably why I think that's kind of irrelevant to me personally. But also, I guess my mom, because she was a stay-home mom, she kind of taught me growing up that try not to rely on someone else for your happiness. Because when you do that, it puts yourself at risk when they change, because people can change. And it's not to say that like you shouldn't trust in your partner, but it's like if you put all your reliance and financial needs on one person, if that person one day doesn't want to be there for you have nothing, right? So it's like it's always better to be the person with that control. Like I would never, like if I was earning more than the person I'm dating, I would never like hurt them purposefully or do that to them because I know how it feels like, right? You know what I mean? So it's like I don't want to have less because I'm dating someone, because then if things change, I feel like I'll be in a very like be don position. I don't know how to say that in English, like passive position. Yeah.
Would you prefer to be a stay-at-home wife? You marry like this millionaire guy, but there's a prenup, and then it's sort of like you can't take half of what he has.
Yeah.
Or would you prefer to be an independent woman, make your own money, and you marry a husband that's also making his own money, and there's no prenup?
I would rather marry the normal person. 100%. No hesitation. Because like, or I don't even mind like marrying someone with lower income than I do, because I could just work harder. Like, I don't really care about a guy's income bracket just because like I was raised in an environment where like I think it taught me that money doesn't make you happy. As someone who majored in like finance and money, you know what I mean? It's like it can't bring you happiness. What I was earning like three times as much as I do now, like I earn enough to get by. That's all I'm gonna say. But like back then I was earning like I could save up a decent amount of money, but I feel like I was like a shopaholic because I would get off of work at like 9 p.m. every day and be really like stressed, right? So I would buy so many things to try to fill that void. So at the end of the day, I wasn't really saving much money. I was what, shopping therapy? It was horrible. Like I was trying to find a way to fill a void because I was so stressed about work and then I wasn't happy. And my mental state was horrible. I was with someone at the time, and they were actually quite toxic because this is completely not related to content creation. But he was earning like 30K more than I was because he was a soft dev, and then he made it like his life mission to remind me that I'm not earning an extra 30K. So I
Over a
think maybe
year?
that's what.
Over a year? A whole year?
Yeah,
Extra.
over a year. He earned an extra 30K in total over a year. But I did all the house chores, like all the cooking, all the house chores and everything, right? All the shopping, like everything was me. I drove. He didn't have a driver's license. But like for some reason, that 30K was a big deal, you know? So I guess like maybe it's past trauma. I just don't want someone else to have that power over me again. So I guess that's why I like being independent. And I don't know if I'm ready to like have someone in my life yet because I'm not at an income bracket where I feel like I can support a family or another person. But when I get there one day, I'll happily, willingly spoil someone to no returns, and then that's good. That would be nice. Please don't earn as much as I
So, on the topic of like divorces and if it's fair if the wife should get
do.
half of what the man makes. Hypothetically, let's say we jump 5 years in the future. You are now an independent woman. You've met you. You can survive on your own. You make a decent amount to cover all your expenses and more. And let's say hypothetically we get married. If we break up and have a divorce, why do you need half of my millions? Let's say I'm a millionaire.
Well, to be fair, that's a good point, but I guess like let's say that you didn't have $1 million and I had $1 million. I can always earn $1 million back. So like 'cause I don't want to use you as an example 'cause you'd be like So my logic is this. You've loved this person before, you've cared for this person, you've spent time together, and you've committed that time and you've committed that, love to each other at one point, right? And you gave each other time, which is the most important thing in the world. So the very least I can do for my partner is to put them in a position where they can run. Do you know what I mean? Like, sure, like maybe things like happened that like ruined the relationship. Maybe like one person cheated, maybe they did something to hurt you, but in reality, you did love this person at one point. You were in love with them. And I think the least that I can do as a person is to put you in a position where you can still run. Because you're still going to be grieving. You're going to be sad. You're going to be going through heartbreak. The very least I could do is put you in a situation where you're able to survive on your own. Because that's the least I can do. I think it's just maybe because I see so many people not do that. And like when they fall out of love, they become so cruel that I don't want to ever treat someone that I love like that. That's the least I can do. And if you are a millionaire, you are fully capable of earning another million. And if you can't, why is your ego so big?
So let's run the same scenario. Let's say it's 5 years from now, it's 2029. In your most ambitious goals, how much would you want to be making a year? Toxic money.
Half a mil?
Okay.
That's good enough.
So let's say in 2029, you're making half a mil, and I'm making, say, 10 mil a year. And we married, we're together for a few years, and maybe like the numbers stay the same for a few years. And we sort of get a divorce. Would you like do you need half of my net worth?
No,
Or what's gonna happen in that
yeah, in this
scenario?
situation with both people are like capable of surviving on their own, I do agree. You don't really need to split anything. You could give what you choose you want to give. So let's say that we had a dog together, and you think that I would be better off with the dog because I'm emotionally more like unstable. I would appreciate that because we've dated for a couple years that you care, or we were married, that you would care enough to leave me with the dog. You know what I mean? It's stuff like that. Like,
The next
I think it's just
scenario.
having. You're just like, nah, that's not what I want
No, that's perfect. No, I understood the point. And like, you didn't say, if you said no, then that would have been very interesting. If you're like, of course, I'd want more money.
Then that would have
Well,
been.
I want the dog. Like, let's say
Yeah, that's
hypothetically we
fine.
had a dog. I
Cool.
want the dog, okay?
Cool. Fine.
Now, let's say, similar scenario, but when I get married, I'm like, hey, toxic bunny, I want you to, hopefully this doesn't happen, but if we do get divorced, I'd like you to sign this prenup where it says if we get divorced, we're not gonna take each other's stuff. How would you respond to it? Would you sign it? What's your thoughts?
So it depends on if one person has to give up anything for the other person. So let's say that you're not a millionaire, but you require someone to stay home to take care of your children and to like give up their goals for you, then I think a prenup is unfair in that situation. So if you're like to a certain extent limiting someone else's ability to grow, then you should not be asking for a prenup. However, if you're both still capable of being independent and doing your own goals and prioritizing your own goals without asking the other person to do anything for you, then I think it's fair that there's no prenup, but usually one person has to take the shorter end of the stick in a relationship. Just because, like, if you're just gonna be independent and do your own thing, then why are you dating? I don't know if that makes sense. Because everyone wants someone to take care of them. Oh, yeah. Okay, let's get going.
Let's say similar scenario, same income bracket. You're making 500K, I'm making 10 mil. And then I'm like, let's get married and I have a prenup. And let's say in this scenario, you want kids. You want three kids. We're gonna have three kids. And you're gonna have to give up your work to raise those three kids. And in the prenup, it says you would get 500K for the amount of, like, we'll do 100 years. Minus your age. Let's say you're gonna live an extra 40 years. You'll get 40 years times 500K when we break up, if that happens.
So that
That's
makes sense.
completely reasonable. Yes.
Okay, and then let's say, so that would equate, let's say you have 40 years left. That would be, I'll give you $20 million for the divorce case. And let's say we get divorced 10 years later, and I'm worth 10 billion.
That doesn't matter because it's not mine. I'm sorry. I don't know. I just why is the thumbs up? I'm just like, it's not mine though. Like, we chose different paths. We've signed a contract on how much you're giving me. I am supporting your three children. You also will have visitation rights, right? It is your children. Let's let that take care of them, and you give me 500K per year for 40 years, I think, or like however years, yeah, 100. I think that's reasonable, and that's more than enough. what, $20 million is more than enough for retirement. I don't know. I think people shouldn't be greedy. Like, what are you going to do with $10 billion? Like,
now let's say this is something I'm trying to, you know, like pitch to my future wife. How would you advise me to do it in a very romantic way?
Wait, can you repeat the question?
How can I? Well, I guess based on your reaction, you're totally fine. But like, I would have thought if someone, like if I handed that to someone, I'd have to sell it to them. But based on what I shared, it seems like it's an easy sell.
Yeah, I still don't get the question. My bad.
If I had to tell my future wife about this prenup, should I do it in any different way? Is there any
nicer way?
No. Oh, I see what you mean. No. I think it's completely reasonable to bring it up. Like maybe in the earlier times of the relationship. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, we're like similar age, right? We're not like young or anything. I think it's immature for people to hide things like that. I think like maybe the first couple dates you can bring it up. Like if they're not okay with it, then it's already not a good fit. For example, I view prenups kind of like children. Like, I'm going to tell them I don't want kids. And if they want kids, we're probably not a good fit for each other. Mm-hmm. You don't want to change people, their core values and what matters to them. If they change, talk about it when you change your perspective, because that's communication. That's fine. But like, if you already know you don't want kids, you should let people know ahead of time. You know, if that changes, I'll tell you. But like, if you're okay with not having kids and they don't want kids, then it's a good match. If that changes, then talk about it. I think that's really healthy, as well as prenups. Like, talk about it as early as you can. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the reason I asked is because until we sort of went down this rabbit hole, I would have thought you'd be an anti-prenup, like, I'm the woman, like, it's only fair I get half of the guys. Like, I would have thought, and I think most people, maybe most women, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe feel similar to that. But I guess after this conversation, you're obviously more open than I thought.
So I'll explain. I guess, like, I don't really like relying on other people. That might be the root of why. And I also feel like, generally speaking, I go broke whenever I date a guy. I know that's really uncommon. Like, a lot of guys in my chat are just like, that doesn't make any logical sense. I don't like it when guys pay for my things. Mm. I don't like monetary gifts. And I tend to go broke whenever I date a guy. So I think partially the reason why I'm not, like, I don't want to date is because I don't think I have the financial means to spoil with someone right now. Like, I can't buy you everything I want to buy you. So I don't really want to find someone right now. When I'm capable of spoiling someone like that, I will find someone. But also, it'll give me time to heal my mental state. But it's like, I feel like I'm a little bit more like a dude. I'm also a hopeless romantic. So I just like giving people stuff. Yeah, it's weird. That might be the root of why I don't think I need to take anything away from someone unless I give up something. So it's like, if I quit streaming to raise your children, I think it's reasonable that the prenup says that I get a certain amount of income to survive after, or to restart what I want to restart, you know? But like, it's a reasonable amount.
Talking about like mental health, Do you get most of your mental health therapy from just your stream, your content, you talking to viewers, or do you have therapists or older mentors or older friends that you go to? Or do you have friends that you talk to every day? What's your current mental health sort of routine?
Yeah, so I only recently started seeing a therapist. I used to self-isolate and like do things myself, very independent, generally speaking, because I was afraid that I would like burden people. Like, they're big problems and I can't even solve them myself. How can I put this on someone else? Maybe it's the gaslighting as a kid, but I was scared of talking to people about it. So I spent the first 8-9 years of my like pubescent years not talking to people about it. But during like my time working at corporate, there was like, my relationship wasn't going well. It was really unhealthy. Work was really stressful. Like, I was just in a really bad state. So like, it's hard not to have breakdowns sometimes if you're streaming that late at night. So I would have these like breakdowns, and like, you know, my community would ask me if I'm okay. And that's what kind of led to Free Therapy Fridays, because they were helping me, so I wanted to give back. And so I hosted a forum for them to talk about their problems. And throughout that process, I learned about myself, as well as I also like felt like I was contributing, positively to the world. So I guess it helped me kind of heal as well. And I kept doing it for like 2-3 years. Now I do have a therapist, but it's like recent 7-8 months. I finally like have I guess like accepted that it might be helpful to have some guidance. Of course, throughout my life, I had a lot of mentors, and like I'm really good with parents, so I would oftentimes chat with people's parents. So I've had a lot of guidance from older people, but now I have like an actual therapist, and it has been the best thing for me ever. So I always recommend a therapist, like a good one, of course. Look for a good one. But it's like, I do think that they help guide you. It's like a better life coach, really, is what a therapist is.
Nice. Can we do like a mini therapy Thursday? Obviously, you can be the therapist and I'm just coming in. This is me sort of putting ego aside and wanting to experience sort of your thing. Let's do like a mini therapy Thursday now.
So you gotta give me a question. You gotta like say your question and then I can answer it.
Okay. So my question right now, Toxic Bunny, is I don't know what the question should be. That's my question. I don't know what to ask right now.
Guess, do you have any unexplored childhood traumas that you think are causing you impending doom or changing the way you make decisions every day?
I think I spent a lot of time uncovering and accepting and really seeing my childhood for what it is, and that it really helped me. And like, I sort of try to look back and try to explore, but I feel like it's just I'm so grateful for that process. And every time I explore, I'm like, oh, I'm like sort of like, yeah, I'm very grateful for my childhood and my sort of random mixture of adversity that sort of led me to where I am. And I don't know, like, can you help prod that?
I feel like that's a pretty healthy childhood, to be honest. Like just hearing from it. Did you ever have like any struggles in school or like the way that your parents kind of, I guess, engaged in your upbringing?
I guess if I were to sort of go back to old Andy would have said things like, you know, my parents split up when I was young. My father was never around. He never financially supported my mother. He sort of went off to do business. In school, I was always really the odd kid out. Like, I'd talk to everyone, but I would never have my own group of friends. So I was quite lonely, even though I had people to talk to, but I was never included. So that felt really bad. Definitely was like a lot of insecurities, but not insecurities, sort of like confusion, because I was sort of being myself and people weren't liking me, and that caused a lot of sort of angst. So that's sort of my upbringing.
Oh, do you think there's ever like self-worth issues that you're struggling with right now? Like, do you ever feel like you don't deserve what you have or that you have to work even harder to get where you are?
I think maybe initially I was trying really hard to prove people wrong, to show that, you know, all my crazy questions and thoughts weren't crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that all came from my dad.
And, you know, I need to thank my dad for it. But now I'm sort of like, I'm like just happy with, like, I'm happy that I'm doing past Andy justice. Like, I know like 18-year-old me would wish to be on this Zoom podcast with Toxic Bunny and just chilling and
I'm
sitting.
quirky. No.
I meant in like a grateful way that I can sort of do this for a living, talk to cool, interesting people, like have this set up and have my own spot. Like, that's what I meant, not like in a creepy way.
No. Of course. I guess like you probably found a sense of self-healing throughout like creating like podcasts and content, but it would be interesting to discover, I guess, like more and like dig into your past more because it can help like improve the efficiency of your everyday. So I guess like discovering yourself, this process just makes you more and more efficient. It's not that like it needs to be fixed. It's not that the way you coped is wrong. It just might not be the most efficient way to do so. So it's like finding ways to be even more happy, even more efficient, even more, I guess, like hopeful for the future. Like you could be in a better mental state than you are now. So it's like, I do think you healed really well though, especially without like external help or therapy. It's like finding out what you struggle with and things that might like the overthinking, the intrusive thoughts, and how to handle them. Because I definitely think that childhood Andy probably had his fair share of trauma, as well as struggles. So it's like there might be some that are unresolved, and maybe like thinking about those intrusive thoughts and where they stem from might help improve the efficiency of your everyday and maybe even make you more happy than you are now.
Okay, so me putting my ego aside and me showing that I want to learn, can we try do like a mini discovery session where maybe I can optimize and sort of optimize my thing? Can we try that now?
Oh, kind of just like talking about or prodding more.
Or like, how would I go about, like, let's say you're a therapist, how do I go ahead and optimize things? I want to learn and try that now.
Yeah. Are there ever like times in your day where you feel like you're maybe anxious or struggling with the topic, or like when these intrusive thoughts occur, or do you never get those at all?
So like throughout the day, I'm often, you know, I feel all the emotions. I feel lonely. I feel there's a weight on my shoulders. I feel like I have responsibilities for my employees, for my family. I get into social media, death scrolls, and I feel
guilty. Oh my God, I did that too.
About myself, and I hate myself for doing it. Not hate myself, but I feel a bit guilty. I'm getting better at it. So I feel all the emotions, I guess.
So it's like a sense of guilt for like even doing part of your job almost, or like not achieving certain goals that you want to hit basically, right?
Well, I guess like for example, like a scenario would be, let's say I finish this podcast and I'm a bit tired. I jump on Instagram to check something. But all of a sudden I'm just scrolling through reels and I can't stop. Yeah. And half an hour's gone by and I'm like, man, like I shouldn't have done that. I feel bad. And then I sort of acknowledge that feeling. And I try to build up some encouragement and start getting back to work and try to get on with the day. So that might be a scenario that might happen.
That's not too bad. Because if you think about it, like that's how Instagram is designed. I guess like reassuring yourself that you do need breaks and you do deserve these breaks. Like desk scrolling is part of how Instagram is designed. You're really just playing into what the app is. That's part one. Part two, also understanding that you're basically doing market research. Like you're also involved in social media. So to a certain extent, like desk scrolling is part of the content creation podcast, like looking for creator journey. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. But yeah, limiting your time, maybe setting alarms, like giving yourself that like responsibility and accountability, like set a time to end the desk scrolling might be a good way to do it.
So you reckon, I guess the takeaway, me sort of putting my ego aside and wanting to learn from you, would be if I sort of get into that situation after the 30 minutes, maybe rather than sort of feeling guilty, being like, hey, you know, I had this cool long podcast, I'm a bit exhausted, so this was a well-deserved death scroll. And I also learned some things. It might have not actually been absorbed, it might have been one ear out the other, but at least maybe subconsciously something stuck. And like, it's okay, let's try rebuild some momentum and get through the rest of the day.
Yeah, so it's like focusing on not beating yourself down. I don't know if it's rooted in self-worth, because it's like, it's almost feeling like you don't deserve a break, or you like have to be productive. Like that's something that I personally struggle with, and I think it is tied to self-worth. And low self-worth is usually generated because of like childhood traumas, or situations where you feel like you don't deserve something. It, not always 100%, but these are just like theories and hypotheticals. But yeah, that's why I guess like free therapy for my stream, I always remind them, it's like advice from your neighbor who's like maybe a close friend. Like, it's like another perspective. Take it with a grain of salt. It's not going to be 100%. Even a professional therapist is not going to be able to give you like the answer to life. You're going to have to filter out the knowledge and interpret it yourself and use it the way that you want to use it. And like you said, it's like putting the ego aside, just listening and seeing if you want to take it. I think every person needs to develop like a filter when they get advice on the internet, because it's only relevant to you if you can filter out the things you that are irrelevant, you know, because no one can understand yourself better than you. So you have to know what's best for yourself almost. These are all hypotheticals. I could be completely off.
So let's flip the mirror and we'll sort of flip the scenarios, flip the tables, and I'll try to be the therapist. I'll try my best. Maybe I won't do a good job. You can ask me a question. I'll sort of give you my thoughts and we can sort of mirror our responses to each other's feedbacks. So that's sort of the goal of this exercise. So I'm here. It's Therapy Thursdays. How's everything, Toxic Bunny?
Good. How is your weekday? How is your resting schedule? Were you able to like consistently feed yourself and drink water?
I was able to do that. How's everything on your end?
It was good. It was good. I'm curious to hear more about, I guess, like, were you struggling with any intruders? Oh, wait, we're talking about you, right?
We're flipping the tables. So it's like it's the other way around now. We're talking about you. So you have to ask me a question.
Like about you or about me?
You know how I asked you a question and you gave me advice?
Yeah.
So I want you to ask me a question and I'll give you advice.
So we're gonna flip
Oh, got it. Okay,
the
yeah,
time.
got it.
And then we're gonna see the different responses. Oh, I'm curious to see how you respond, yeah. But I might not give the best advice, but I'll try my best.
Oh, okay. You want to give the advice? Got it. Yeah. My dog passed away, so I've been avoidance style grieving. I talked to my therapist about that. Just like trying to get by, staying productive. I'm not as productive as I want to be, but I also understand that like it's part of the grieving process.
How long ago did your dog die?
He passed away February 6th. So almost a month ago, but I was abroad and with family and visiting grandparents, so he's been frozen this whole time, and I feel like I'm scared to go see him.
And then how'd you find out about his death?
The sitter sent me a picture of him, and then told me he passed away.
Did you know he was sort of getting old and about to die, or did it come as a shock and you weren't expecting that?
Yeah, so he was 4. He was very healthy. And yeah, it came as a shock because he's still a young dog and he would have only been in the sitter's care for 2 weeks and then a family friend could take over. So it was like, what, 4 days into the trip? And yeah, I was very shocked.
How many days did you have left from the trip?
3 weeks.
Oh, wow.
The rest of the trip. Yeah, it was in the beginning of the trip.
Where was the trip or what was the trip?
I was just going to China to visit like grandparents and family and my parents.
And I guess like you would have want like the trip was like meant to be like this happy reunion with family, and then you heard that 4 days in. How did that affect the rest of the trip?
Honestly, the first week I basically couldn't function properly. I lost time, but like I am diagnosed with like PTSD. So I think I handle it in a way where it's like I have dealt with trauma in the past, and like it stepped up. So I do think that mental diagnoses can be viewed as like a debuff, but if used correctly, they can protect you sometimes. In this specific situation, I only like shut down for a week and then I forced myself back up because like I haven't visited grandparents in 4 years because of COVID. The 4 years in which my dog was alive, I never came back to China. So I knew that I couldn't just go back immediately. And going back wouldn't fix anything. I guess I was very realistic at the time. I was like very logical. Going back is not going to bring him back. It's not going to change anything. And like, I'm already in China. I need to get what I came here to do done before I can go back home to see him. Because he wouldn't want me to go back and just like regret everything. You know what I mean? So went to the gathering, saw my grandparents, tried to smile. And it got easier as time went on. Like by the third week, it was a lot easier than the first. But like coming back is really hard because you gotta go pick them up. You gotta go look into like cremation burial. So that's been pretty hard. Damn, I gave you a hard one, didn't I? You're just like, oh gosh.
Prior to going overseas, how did not seeing your live dog for 4 weeks, like the thought of that, make you feel? Were you like sad to not see him, or were you like, oh, it's fine, I'll see him when I come back? Were you gonna miss him because you were with him for 4 years straight? How were you feeling prior to leaving?
I was so nervous because like we're really bonded and like I don't think I've ever been loved like he loved me. It's like unconditional love, right? The dog in the girl's 20s. No one talks about the dog in the girl's 20s. They always talk about the first boyfriend. No. The first dog a girl gets in her 20s is the individual that teaches her about unconditional love. And like I truly believe that. Like he taught me how to slowly love myself and to, I guess, like take better care of myself because I was taking care of him. He can't communicate, right? So like I was so worried leaving him. But it's like it's been 4 years. You know what I mean? My parents are just like, hey, when you're coming home, when you're coming to visit your grandparents, I was like, I think he's at a spot where he's really easy to take care of. I couldn't find family here to take care of him because I don't have that much family in like North America. Although we're all American, they prefer being in Asia. And then so because I couldn't find family, I had to like resort to sitters. Friends, most of them are really busy, so I just didn't want to be a burden, and I paid someone. I interviewed him, I went through the whole process, he met my dog and everything. But it just didn't turn out the way I thought it would. Yeah, lots of nerves, lots of fear. I travel a lot for like Instagram content, and I almost always bring my dog. I think we've been apart for like 20 something days in the last 40, sorry, in the last 4 years. And I would prioritize collaborations where I could bring him and minimize collaborations I couldn't bring him.
And then now that he sort of, when he passed away, I guess even when you came back from after that trip, how did it feel to not have that unconditional love and have that be missing from your life?
It is horrible. I don't know how to describe it. It's like everything reminds you of him. It's like this emptiness in your stomach, right? It's probably just a normal part of grieving. You just feel so empty. And it's like you expect him to be there on the car waiting. You expect him to claw at the door. You expect him to be there, but he's not. So it just feels really weird and uncomfortable. But you know where he is. You just don't really want to go see him yet because you're scared, I guess. That's probably all normal parts of grieving, so.
I guess. Yeah, so that was literally a week. You've been back. Yeah, you only came back
From
a
China
day.
recently.
A day. I've had 24 hours to process.
And how's the last 24 hours being in back at home without him being?
Honestly, I've let like the OC tendencies take over. Like I'm letting my mental diagnoses like take over because like the ability to cope with trauma is better than what I can do by myself. The OC tendencies will help distract my mind. Like I truly believe that, you know, there's a lot of people in this world that are diagnosed that are still capable of functioning and doing a lot of things even though they have a mental diagnosis. And if you learn to use it to your benefit, I think it's helped me more than it's hurt, at least in times of great adversity. It's a pro, not a con. Like I unpacked, I cleaned because it helped with the obsession.
How do you feel, or what do you feel like you actually need to do, OCD aside? Like, what is the right thing for you to do in this situation? Do you feel like from your heart? Or what do you think is the right thing to do, OCD aside?
I think finding answers, like, because to me, that's how I grieve. Maybe it's not for everyone else. People on the internet are so judgy. They're like, you need to log off social media and grieve. I'm like, that's not how everyone grieves. But I think I need to find answers. My brain maybe functions too much like a story. It needs to have a conclusion that I feel like is an ending, or else I'm gonna be stuck on this page. So finding answers, I guess.
And how do you feel about the balance between finding answers instead of just letting your OCD take over and just getting work done, being productive? Like, is it a poor gab? Can you do both at the same time? Or like, what's the relationship there between those two things?
I think they can coexist because finding answers can be a task in itself, so it's not too bad.
And do you think it'll be hard for you to sort of task in that task of finding answers into your already packed schedule?
No, I think I can probably manage. I'm less productive than I used to be, but I'm forgiving myself for that. Yeah, because
Cool.
there's only so much you can do after grieving. Oh gosh, wow, look at me trauma dumping on you. I hope that wasn't too heavy.
I think if I were to become a therapist, I'd have to charge like $10,000 an hour.
You didn't enjoy it, did you? I enjoy doing that. I don't know if that makes sense. It's really weird.
No, it takes like I do it for like close friends, and it takes a lot of listening, a lot of empathy, a lot of care, a lot of really wanting to listen to the other person and just putting yourself, your ego completely
I need to get better
aside.
at that. I need to get better at listening. I'm not good at it.
So like yeah, it's not easy, but I feel like that's why I enjoy talking to, like, I have friends that like from high school, like they're now therapists.
And it's
Oh, that's cool.
but like during my talks, it's just me trying to gauge where they're at. Like for me to find a therapist, I'd need to find someone that has more life experience than me, has gone through more than me, has been through the ups and downs of life, so that they could really relate and sort of put themselves in my shoe, because like the everyday therapist or listener wouldn't be able to do that and would probably give me some textbook answer or sort of just like guess what they're doing. Like for example, in this scenario, obviously two points. One, when we played it, I sort of asked you a question. I asked you specific questions, whereas when we mirrored it, you sort of just gave me a statement and was like, this is what happened, figure it out. So that's one difference. And the second thing I noticed is like, just based on where it was going, obviously you're like, hey, I gave you a hard one, didn't I? I knew it was not a scenario where I would give advice. All I could do is listen and help unpack and see where you're at with it. And even if I did give advice, it wouldn't seal, because I would be hit with buts, or like, but this, but that, because it's a unique scenario for you. And everyone thinks so, like, all I could do is listen. So obviously this is me unbreaking everything, and it makes it look not sexy and not cool and not nice. Obviously the conversation we had was beautiful, and this is me unpacking behind the scenes. It's sort of me revealing the how the magic is done. So definitely makes it sound less pretty. But yeah.
So I think the difference between you and me is I do this every week and I also have a therapist. The main difference is it's easier for me to open up because that's what I do on social media. I think it is still possible to give me advice, but I'm better at telling you what my mental state is. I don't know if that makes sense. So I'm better at being honest with myself to a certain extent. Because with you, I had to dig. So it's like, let's say, what are you struggling with? You would tell me like a very like surface level answer. You wouldn't go deeper into it because you're also not used to that. You know what I mean? You're not used to be like unpacking what exactly you feel and what's the root of that cause. So I had to ask follow-up questions, kind of dig deeper into understanding your past. Versus me, I just went, here is everything that happened. Here's what I'm struggling with. And it's still possible to give advice, but I do think that like, because I talked about, this is exactly what I talked about with my therapist today. It is possible to give advice and guidance, but it's more so like, I do think it requires more education in psychology because it's not what an average person without that background can give. I don't know if that makes sense. It's harder versus like, I was just trying to unpack like what you were struggling with. Yeah. So is that helpful? Kind of. That's my interpretation.
I think I have gotten really good at digging to a point you didn't know or feel like I was digging. I was using a shovel that was very soft, very gentle, and it didn't feel like it was digging at all. And I think it's rare. I only have met maybe one or two people that can do the same for me. I think as a result, I've always been, I guess that's why I have a podcast. I always listen, but obviously I love to talk. If someone would want, like I have one or two friends where I can just talk forever. I love talking about myself, but obviously 99% of times I'm listening.
You'd be a great live streamer then.
But live streaming, you need to be talking. Isn't it the opposite?
Yeah, so you say you love to talk. I feel like you would be a great live streamer. Because it's, yeah, podcast is listening, live streaming is talking.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Well, you're still listening, especially if you do free therapy nights, but like you're listening, but they also want to hear your opinion because you're the only person capable of talking. I don't know if that makes sense. So I can't just sit there and be like, I have to talk.
The reason why I only have one or two people that I can talk to is because if I do a stream scenario, I'm just going to get a bunch of surface level questions, but I like getting dug deep and them sort of my friends
You could lead it deep. You
really
could
do that
lead it.
through a stream.
You could lead it deep, you know?
So let's role play this. Let's say you're a chat, and you type hi Andy, hi Toxic Bunny, and then like what would you say in the chat next?
Oh, you mean, oh, okay. So let's say that I want to talk about like gender equality. I probably won't, but like that's a little too political. But I would just leave the conversation there and ask for opinions. We dig really deep into topics because maybe I'm feeling something and we start talking about it and people start adding to it. So you, as a streamer, lead the conversation. The same way as a podcaster, you lead the questions, right? Like you lead where this goes.
Oh, I think the two friends, I don't want to lead. I want to be able to just talk and follow, and leading is tiring. Me listen, it requires work. I don't want to work, but obviously 99% of the time I'm leading, I'm listening, I'm leading the conversation. But like sometimes I just don't want to lead, and I just want to sort of like answer, and I want to sort of be led.
I don't know what field that is. I think streaming, you're still leading, yeah. Like you're ultimately controlling the topics in which we're talking about. As well as the questions they ask, you could lead in a direction you think is better, you know? Yeah.
Is there any reason? What's the main reason for like staying anonymous as a streamer? Like name-wise, I guess. Is there, I'm just out of curiosity. I know this is a side
Yeah.
tangent. I was just curious.
I think it's just like for my parents' safety, as well as like I've had some toxic exes, so I don't really want to end up in a situation where I feel unsafe. That's where the PTSD came from, like kind of abusive situation. So it was when I was younger. So it's like ideally, I'm in a very public world, which probably will put me in danger, but it's put a lot of benefits out there. So it's to keep myself safe. When
Side.
one day, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say side note, and we don't have to dig deep, but I was just curious, like, why do you think you might attract so many horrible exes or attract so many negative things? Or is that not the case?
Oh, I guess like I've had some very unhealthy relationships in the past because I would say that I'm pretty naive and like I love people really deep. So I put myself in dangerous situations or I don't spot red flags fast enough. So I guess I always had a very positive perspective of the world, but the world showed me otherwise. Now I'm always scared. So I was like, oh, the world is full of good people. And then I got, you know, and then I'm just like, okay, maybe I need to be more paranoid. So I guess like just in case, you know. But I think one day if I have enough income to protect myself, like I'll buy like a Rottie, like a Rottweiler and a Doberman, and I'm gonna be hella safe. Yeah, I don't care if my name, you know, goes out on the internet. But it's just like in a situation where I can truly protect myself, then maybe.
Makes sense. Anything, any re this is the last two questions I usually always ask, yes. Any recent discoveries that you've been implementing to your day-to-day life?
Forgiving yourself, remembering to forgive yourself, because I feel like that's something a lot of us don't do enough of. It's a lot of like, I need to do better. I need to. Okay, assuming you're not a narcissist and you don't have an ego problem. Okay, assuming you don't have like ego problems and you're not a narcissist and you're not obsessed with yourself, like forgiving yourself, because a lot of us feel like we're not doing enough. We're not productive enough. We compare ourselves to other people. This is what my therapist taught me, but comparing to other people is part of evolution. It was to keep us safe. It was to keep us, I guess, like part of the pack because we're pack animals. So we compare so that we're like everyone else, so we don't stand out and we don't like get kicked out by the herd, and the pack. So comparing is a normal part of our daily lives, but we have to, because our society has changed, realize that we shouldn't push it too far. Like although it's part of evolution and it's natural, I guess like learning to forgive yourself and appreciate yourself and to not like hurt yourself too much. Because basically, you're your worst enemy, right? As crazy as it sounds, if you can overcome yourself, you can overcome anything. Yeah. Understanding a lot of our functionalities are part of an evolution, but learning how to work with them and I guess adjust to them is important.
Any goals or focus for the next 6 months?
Become a bigger streamer. Work with more brands. I don't know, very stereotypical stuff.
Nice. Any questions for me before we wrap things up?
Yeah, what's your favorite part of hosting podcasts other than listening?
I think I really enjoy sort of a lot of my podcast, majority of probably like 80% of it is sort of like talking to sort of experts in their fields. And I love sort of just hearing and learning from their process. I was hanging the clothes and I realized that like I've talked to like 120 experts or like
That's a
people doing
lot.
interesting things over the last 2, 3 years. And that's really helped shape my current worldview, shape the answers to the questions I've had. And it's sort of like low-key a bit of therapy, because each episode I'm talking, the questions are sort of pretty based and pretty like closely mirrors to what I'm going through at that certain time.
Oh, that's hella cool. Any advice? Like maybe top three pieces of advice you've received?
Top three advice I've received from others. I guess I think one is sort of being present. So like when you ask that question, my natural instincts was to dig back into the last 120 episodes and look at the best of the best. Wow. I've learned somehow subconsciously through talking to so many people is that, you know, you want to be present and I don't want to search that far back. And I just want to sort of think on top of my mind, what are the three things I learned? So that's number one. I think number two, recently, like bring on creators, it's cool to like see all these sort of creators that are, you know, everyone, they're all trying to figure life out. Everyone's sort of at that beginning phase where like, you know, it sort of contrasts all the experts I talk to, whether they're entrepreneurs, founders, or like they have a PhD or something, or they're kickboxer and they've retired after like winning one or two world champions. Like talking to creators, it sort of allowed me to talk to people that are on a similar journey to where I'm at. And like, I found that I was like, huh, like through this, I'm able to sort of attract like-minded creators, entrepreneurs that are my age. And I think that's something I struggled with, because in Sydney, in my radius, there's not many people doing what I'm doing. And the people who respond to my invites are people who probably see my stuff, or they're like, oh, I sort of probably like this person I relate with. So like, I want to do their podcast. So I'm sort of naturally just attracting people that are similar and like-minded. So that's the second thing. And the third thing is sort of just having fun with it. Sort of like just having fun on the episodes, doing what I enjoy, taking it down paths that I find interesting. And the moment it sort of gets not fun or boring or like I don't feel it anymore, then you know, it's, I guess that's the end, and there's no need to force myself to.
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry if I was boring.
No. This was not directed at you.
I was like, okay, now I'm self-conscious. Was I boring?
To empathize with you, when you said I dress old, for the next 30 seconds, I was like
I'm so sorry. You just dress more mature.
I was like self-conscious for the next 30 seconds. And after I had to like psych myself out. No, I'm just trying to level with you that I feel the same way. So like if you felt self-conscious, I felt self-conscious as well.
You just look like an adult and I look like a child. That's my fault.
But those are the three things, I guess.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing. And thank you for taking the time to chat. It was really fun.
No, thank you. Where can people find more of your content? Like, what's the best place? Instagram, Twitch? We'll link everything below, but where are the best places?
Probably Instagram and Twitch. I stream 3 times a week on Twitch, Tuesday, Thursday, Fridays, evenings. And then I'm going to try to post daily on Instagram. Going to go back into the grind.
Are you going to do more cosplay stuff? I know there's like a lot of cosplays. Is that gone? Nice.
Yes, it's a personal hobby. I don't think I'm a professional cosplayer. I've just been doing it for a while because it's fun. Do you watch anime?
I do.
What's your favorite three? I know I was gonna like be like, I'm sorry for taking.
I really time, like, but, you know,
Hunter x Hunter. I really like Attack on Titan was really good.
Okay.
I'm being very selective since you're giving 3. I'm like filtering through everything.
You can do 5 if you can't choose.
And I guess One Piece sits a bit lower than the next tier, and the next tier would include like Jujutsu Kaisen, Naruto, Death Note, Full Metal Alchemist, all these ones, and One Piece would sit slightly above.
You got a lot of shonens in there.
You
got a lot of shonens.
Yeah, I guess we grew up in a shonen era, I guess.
I like
Like the young boy discovery era. Okay, that is so, that makes sense. No, definitely not psychoanalyzing you.
If I were to like be more, I guess, less boyish, I really like all the Studio Ghibli movies. I love
Mononosuke.
I loved the Howling Castle, I don't know. I loved that new movie of Wolf Children. That was amazing.
I haven't watched that one.
Oh, you gotta.
Wolf Children, I
Wolf
think.
Children? Okay, I'm writing it
You gotta watch it. That one's really good. And Your Name was really good.
Wolf
But
Children.
back to the shonen, I guess I forgot to add in what's that? What's that guy that fights demons? Oh, I forgot. He wears green.
Demon Slayer.
Demon Slayer, yeah. That's the
Da 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 da
yeah.
da 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 da. That one.
Your
Hey,
name.
that was not
Your
bad.
name? The movie Your Name?
Okay, yeah, I really like that. That was really
That
good.
was like,
So that's the non-shonen-y,
No, there's
non-war.
nothing wrong with liking shonens. Like, it's
All right,
good.
your
Like, I
turn.
like a lot of shonen.
Your turn.
I feel like I'm gonna get
Pottery.
canceled. If you include this in the podcast, I'm gonna get canceled. Okay, I gotta think about this, you see?
It's hard, yeah.
It's hard because then they're gonna
It's a reflection
psychoanalyze your
of who
anime
you are.
choices.
It's a
They're
reflection of who you
gonna
are.
judge us.
It's a
You know it's
reflection of
true.
who you are.
Death Note, I really like Death Note.
My Hero Academia.
Oh! I watched a bit of that, but okay.
Oh my god,
Attack
that's
on
so.
Titans.
Oh my god. My Hero Academia is so you.
Link Click.
I don't know.
It's a recent one. I'm a photographer, so I like that one. That's top three. I think everything else is like good, but it's like
I really like season one of what's that game? What's that anime where you go into a game and then they're stuck in a
Sword
game?
Art Online.
Yeah, I really love season one.
I broke off my headphones. I love Sword Art Online. Wait, okay, that's there too. You're right, you're right. That I forgot about that one. Sword Art Online is really good. Did you see that? I was like, yeah, it's really good.
Did you play Maple Story when you're younger? That game, Maple Story?
No, I played
No.
StarCraft.
Oh, wow.
Was a nerd. World of
Interesting.
Warcraft.
Wow.
Hearthstone. What else?
Did you play, wait, is World of Warcraft the RPG one or the building one?
It's like raids, like Mythic
World of Warcraft. You know how there was
MMORPG.
Warcraft and World of Warcraft?
Oh, World of Warcraft. It was the one with like groups of people fighting a big monster. It's not the best way to describe it. It's like a yeah.
But Warcraft is more similar to StarCraft, right?
Yes. I never got into I never got into like MapleStory though. I know you brought up MapleStory, but I know a lot of people did play it. It's more similar, yeah, StarCraft and Warcraft.
That's super cool. Yeah, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. It was cool sort of listening to your journey. And I can really see that you sort of do want to sort of help others and go through this and sort of pass on all your lessons. So that's really cool.
I think, yeah,
It's too
like.
gatekeepy. This
Yeah.
industry is too gatekeepy.
Yeah. And you have to be pretty talented to sort of make this work. Like you working in tech, you going through that thing. So you're a pretty talented, driven individual.
I'm just mentally ill.
And yeah, like I guess condolences on the passing away of your dog. I'm surprised that this is your
It's been
first
really
day
good.
back. Your first day back. You spent it, so thank you for your time today. I know I can't really, and like you're probably replying to the email when like after knowing your dog died, so I totally did not know. But
No, you're fine, you're fine. You're completely, it's not your fault.
yeah. Awesome. That's another episode of the podcast. Hopefully you guys enjoy that. This was a pretty fun episode. Please let me know your thoughts, and I'll see you guys next week on another episode. Peace.